From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, as voters in 14 states head to the polls on this Super Tuesday primary, Washington, D.C. is focused on the coronavirus. Congressional appropriators are working to authorize a supplemental spending bill. What will be in it? How much will it fund? Is it needed? We'll talk with Tennessee Congressman Mark Green in just a moment. Also get an update from Congressman Green on the effort to reauthorize the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which includes the controversial FISA courts. And speaking of coronavirus, the Chinese Communist Party is reportedly suggesting to their people the virus came from the United States. China's delayed and deceptive response to the coronavirus has put the world at risk. Now, for those U.S. businesses like Nike, which we talked about yesterday, and others that have cozied up to communist China, as we watch U.S. markets take a hit, could this be the wake-up call for them to stop being Beijing's stooges? Retired Brigadier General Robert Spalding, former advisor to President Trump, joins me for that conversation. Also, nearly a dozen states are advancing legislation to protect underage children from transgender surgeries and hormones. Why is this an issue and why should you be concerned? Well, Dr. Quentin Van Meter, a board-certified pediatric endocrinologist, is here to explain. And we are nearing the height of the state legislative session around the country. What are states working on? What do you need to be watching for? Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council, joins me for that conversation. Also, for those of you who took yesterday's poll, you're going to have a chance, for those that didn't, I should say, you're going to have a chance to take it again. But I'm going to give you the results before the end of the program. And it deals with China and Nike in particular. As we talked about yesterday about how Nike is using the labor of Uyghurs in these forced camps or working factories. Knowing that Nike and these other U.S. companies, which here at home preach social justice, are either aiding or benefiting from the repression of religious minorities in China, will you stop doing business with those companies? Now, if you didn't catch yesterday's program, I'll give you more context a little bit later. But if you did and you didn't get a chance to take the poll, you can still do it. Text radio to 53445. That's 53445. Text radio, and we'll send you the poll to take it. And I'm going to give you the results before the end of the program. All right. Also coming up this Friday and Saturday, if you're within driving distance of Naples, Florida, the Stand Courageous Men's Conference, General Boykin and myself, others will be there. It's all at the website, standcourageous.com. Again, that's this Friday and Saturday, March 6th and 7th in Naples, Florida. All right. The first United States coronavirus deaths took place over the weekend. There's now 60 confirmed cases. Congress is trying to move swiftly to pass a supplemental bill to provide emergency funds to combat the spread of the virus in the state. Joining me now to talk about this is Dr. Mark Green, who represents Tennessee's 7th Congressional District. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony, for having me on the show.
All right. Congress is working to try to appropriators, I should say, at this point, are still trying to put together this bill that we're told is going to be somewhere between $6 to $8 billion. What's this going to fund, and when do we think Congress is going to vote on this?
So the dollars will go to really a number of different agencies in order to prepare and to be a part of the response. You know, it'll be from standing up mask production to getting coronavirus tests out from the CDC to all the labs that can't do the type of it's a very specific polymerase chain type, very complex system, and some labs have the capacity to do it on their own. But most of your, you know, especially rural hospitals and places like that have no capacity. So that those have to be sent from the CDC. It'll also, you know, help fund research like what is going on in Nebraska, University of Nebraska, where they're using remdesivir, which was an antiviral designed for Ebola. Well, it turns out that it interrupts the replication of this particular RNA virus. Coronavirus is an RNA virus, and basically kills the virus. So they're testing it in those patients from the Princess cruise ship. So it's a number of different things. It'll also help replenish the strategic medical stockpiles, you know, once those get, we're going to dig into those if this thing gets really bad.
Now, 60 confirmed cases. We've seen 9 deaths in the United States. Now, some of those already physically compromised. I mean, they had pre-existing issues.
Almost all of them, actually. I haven't seen the latest of the last three. The first six I saw, and they were all, some kind of comorbidity.
Right. So is this, obviously, I'm grateful the administration is responding. They've been working on this since December, of course. In the last 2 weeks, it's become the daily news. And, we're talking about it here. But in part, we're talking about it because I think calm is needed. Is more being made of this than we should be making of it?
Absolutely. But at the same time, I think we've been lulled into a sense of complacency about influenza, for example. Yes. And so when this thing pops up, it's very influenza-like. And so, of course, some people, not all, but some people on the other side are using it as a political opportunity. But the truth of the matter is, influenza was the 8th leading cause of death in adults in 2017. It is, and this is like influenza. So if you're elderly or if you have a comorbidity, you have a higher risk of succumbing to the virus. But all of those measures that we use to fight flu, they're already built into the system. With flu every year happening, you don't go to the emergency department and see your ER physician standing there in a bio-4 hazard suit.
Right.
So our teams, our hospitals are prepared to take care of this. They do disaster preparedness every year in order to be accredited. They're ready for it. So I think it's some people are being opportunistic with this. The president very quickly and very early on implemented the travel restrictions from China and was called a racist. And now they're saying he didn't do enough. So that's
he can't
frustrating,
win.
But yeah, he can't win. I mean, New York Times is calling it the Trump virus. And I hate even mentioning it because I don't want to be cast into that lot of making this political. But but shame on them for doing that. Let's focus on getting this fixed.
Well, before I want to move on to this topic of the FISA courts and the reauthorization of this. But before I do that, as a medical doctor, you treat these types of things. You understand.
Yeah, I'm an ER docs too, so I'm at the tip of the spear on this, or my people are.
So there are some very practical things that this is a reminder of what we need to do as individuals, as families, as employers. Some very practical things that can stop the spread of not just the coronavirus, but influenza, as you were talking about.
Absolutely. If people would cough into their inside of their elbow as opposed to their hand, if they would use hand sanitizer judiciously. I think most people know that know that I had cancer. I had colon cancer, and I went through chemotherapy 8 months through the winter. We had everybody come into my office use hand sanitizer. I never got a cold once.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we use good personal hygiene, use those hand sanitizers, spray the Lysol and all that stuff, we can really, really prevent the spread of illness, especially one like this.
And I would say, good health is in order as well. Eating right, getting the proper amount of rest, taking vitamins. Vitamin C is a great preventative from picking up these types of things. So there's a personal responsibility aspect here as well.
There is. And people should remember, if they get ill and they have a normal immune system, they're not going to have a problem, but they should stay home and not get around people who have, coronary artery disease or diabetes, because those patients have an increased risk. And if you're a patient with those high risks, you really should avoid travel right now, because it's in America. The virus is here. There's no getting around that. If you have a comorbidity, if you're older than 60 or so, you probably ought to limit your travel and exposure.
Err on the side of caution.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. I want to move on to this, Congressman Green, because I know this is something you're also interested in. There were those that were talking about trying to reauthorize the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which expires, I think, on the 17th of this month. trying to attach this. That's now been batted down. I think both Speaker Pelosi and Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader in the House, have said we're not going to do that. But in and of itself, this is a topic that needs to be discussed because the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, in the December report, pointed to at least 17 abuses in the Crossfire Hurricane investigation, which relied very heavily on the FISA warrants. This is something people need to understand. It's done behind closed doors. People don't have an opportunity to see what's going on there. I think it's dangerous.
It is dangerous. And, you know, you cited the FBI's, you know, the Horowitz report that basically said the FBI lied to the FISA court 17 times. And there was an intentionality to that. So absolutely, there have got to be some reforms. You know, some kind of outside review system, or in any case where there's potential political, you know, sensitivity, we've got to have other people involved. You just can't let the department that's part of the administration do that. So there are multiple changes to this FISA law that have to happen. And as I understood it, it's the 15th. So we're looking at 12 days from now.
Right. You're
if
correct.
We just renew FISA, I mean, that's going to be a huge mistake and a big missed opportunity.
Yeah, you're right. It is the 15th. I thought it was the 17th, but it is the 15th. And there's actually bipartisan opposition now, not for all the same reasons, but there are Democrats that are opposed to this just as the Republicans. And I was opposed to these from the very beginning. I just think government needs transparency. And I think one of the things that's put forward is the FISA should issue no warrants on American citizens. It's one of the things that I think Senator Lee has put that forward. But clearly, given the track record here, we have to have some sunshine, some transparency into what is happening with these FISA courts.
Absolutely. I mean, we have to there should be constraints on what the FBI or the government in whatever capacity, what they present to the FISA court. So there has to be some level of some standard that has to be met with the evidence that's presented to that FISA court. I mean, here, if you look at that Steele dossier, we all know now that it was a manufactured document. No one had confidence in it, yet it wound up being used anyway to justify surveillance. I mean, basically marshaling the surveillance of our government, of the state, against a campaign, a political campaign. That can never happen again. So there have got to be some level, some standards set. If we don't do that, we've missed an opportunity. And if people abuse that system, these FBI agents who lied, we need to make the penalties on that extremely harsh. So this never happens again.
That's a really good point, something that has to happen, because we have to have some protections in an open society like ours that cherishes and protects freedom. That also makes us vulnerable. And so we have to have some protections, but those that have the levers of power have to be held accountable when they use them.
Yeah, you can't become like your enemy in order to win. Because if you have to become like your enemy to win, why fight in the first place?
Right, absolutely. Dr. Mark Green, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks,
always,
Tony.
Great to talk with you. All right, Congressman Mark Green of Tennessee. All right, coming up next, as the world scrambles to deal with the coronavirus, all because China kind of delayed, in large part because they delayed in responding to it, and they're actually not telling the truth even now to their own people. Retired Brigadier General Robert Spalding is here next. Don't go away.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions. But the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemical-abortion.
China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever heard the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Some progressive universities are offering courses to help men unlearn rigid definitions of masculinity, treating it as if it were a mental health condition. Thankfully, the culture doesn't have the last word on manhood. God does. Check out our StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right. Yesterday, we talked about this extensively. And for those that listen to this program on a regular basis, you'll know that I am no fan of China, a repressive regime abusing people left and right, religious people in particular. We were talking about the Uyghurs, these Muslim minority groups that they have had in these describe them concentration camps. Yesterday, we talked about how Nike is actually using, building these, or making their products in plants that has forced labor from these Uyghurs. In fact, if you want to take my poll question, text radio to 53445. I'm going to give you the results later. Radio to 53445. All right. What does this have to do with the coronavirus? Well, a secretive, deceptive country. In fact, reports are they're telling their own people it came from the United States. At what point will U.S. businesses that have been cozying up to communist China wake up? I mean, the stock market here taking a hit, Americans falling ill to this virus. What's it going to take? Well, joining me now to talk about this is retired Brigadier General Robert Spalding. He is a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. Previously, he served as senior director for strategy to the president and was the chief architect of the framework for the national competition in the Trump administration's national security strategy. General, welcome to Washington Watch.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Can America trust China and the information we're getting out of that country?
No, absolutely not. I think that's the, one of the things that you come to the conclusion after you just watch the actions of the Chinese people, of course. If you're living in Beijing, the citizens there look to the U.S. Embassy air quality index reports that they put out. In fact, the Chinese Communist Party really got angry when they realized that the people of Beijing weren't listening to them. They're listening to the U.S. Embassy, of course. They do port calls in Australia and get baby formula. So in so many instances, the Chinese people are actually looking other than the government for accurate data.
Well, all right, correct me if I'm wrong then, General, because I get the perception that American businesses and some of the cultural elite and our institutions of higher learning, and I'm saying that sarcastically because I'm not sure how much they teach anymore, Why do they trust what China says? It seems like they're more inclined to go with what China has to say than what the people of China are saying.
Well, I mean, that's exactly right. And I, in fact, I made that point to a group of China scholars yesterday at a roundtable on rule of law. You know, we engaged the Chinese Communist Party because they're the, you know, essentially the sovereign of China. And we've basically given up engaging with the Chinese people. Now, we used to do this quite a lot, particularly during the Cold War. We spent a lot of money and effort on Radio Free Europe and Radio Free Asia and Voice of America. Of course, all of those have essentially stopped really doing the heavy lifting of public diplomacy since we got rid of the U.S. Information Agency. And, you know, L'Aquilesta and a lot of these leaders of these now democracies of the former Soviet Union came to Washington, D.C. after the end of the Cold War and really thanked the Radio Free Europe and Voice of America and our efforts at public diplomacy because it was the one thing that they could depend on for accurate reporting other than their government.
But isn't that, I mean, I would think, given the track record of that and actually what we see happening right now in the Middle East and in parts of Africa, I mean, Sudan, example that, the people rose up against a totalitarian regime there after 30 years. You're seeing it in Iraq. Iran, an example, the people pushing back against the repressive regime. It would appear to me that that same strategy could work in China if we were communicating with the people and affirming them in pushing back against their repressive government.
Yes, and one of the things you realize if you read the Tiananmen papers, which were essentially leaked Chinese Communist Party documents of the speeches that were given during the Tiananmen massacre, is that they realized that they needed to drive indoctrination into all grade levels to revamp the education system and the history of the people so that they could essentially control the narrative. That's also when they started to devise, you know, these more effective digital controls like the Great Firewall. They've dominated media, not just in China, but outside of China. So I don't know if you noticed, but last week, the State Department designated the four main media agencies out of China as essentially organs of propaganda. So that's what they've been doing. We've been very slow to catch on to that.
When you look at what's happening here, where the information is not getting to the Chinese people, the firewall. The people don't understand here in our country, they don't have the same access, the same ability to get the information. But the bigger picture here, this, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but this kind of speaks to kind of a policy we've had in our foreign policy and our defense since Korea is more of a containment policy because I think it emanates from a worldview that sees in this postmodern world that everything is equal and we're not willing to challenge bad ideas. And too many of the elite in this country are not willing to challenge the values of these other countries like the Communist Party of China.
Yeah, well, at the same time, I think what happened after the Tiananmen massacre is not only did the Chinese Communist Party recognize that they needed access to technology, talent, innovation, and capital from the West, but that they also couldn't have democratic principles flowing into their country. And so in addition to everything they did, they really started to control the narrative. At the time, you know, rather than realize what was going on, we adopted a foreign policy of openness because we believed that through openness, open markets lead to wealth and wealth leads to democracy. And of course, the Chinese Communist Party turned the tables upside down on us.
Extremely important point, because the businesses that have benefited from those open markets now are embracing the values of China more than they are the American values.
Yeah, you make a very good point, because that's exactly what happened when Daryl Morey, the general manager of the Houston Rockets, sent a tweet about Hong Kong, and then right. The Chinese Communist Party tried to get NBA to fire him.
Hey, General, we're out of time. Got to leave it there. But I want to finish this conversation another time with you. Thanks so much for joining us. Folks, don't go away. We're back after this. Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council and host of Washington Watch. I invite you to join our family and thousands of others across the country in standing on the Word of God as we go into 2020, the global year of the Bible, by joining in a two-year family chronological Bible reading plan. I can assure you that your family will be powerfully impacted by reading God's Word and growing in the understanding of His truth together. The readings take only 15 to 20 minutes a day, with Sundays set aside for a family or small group discussion. To join us, simply go to TonyPerkins.com and click on Stand on the Word with FRC. That's TonyPerkins.com or call 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Let's stand together on the Word of God and change the world, beginning in our own home.
Last year, my brother Josh, a 37-year-old married father with five kids under the age of nine, announced he was becoming a woman. Josh changed his name to Melissa and now requires everyone to use she, her pronouns when referring to him. If the grandparents refuse to do this, they've been threatened with limited access to their grandchildren. My tall, handsome, muscular brother began taking strong female hormones that transformed him into a different person. He began wearing dresses, wigs, heels, and makeup in public. He will have to stay on female hormones until the day he dies. He refuses to answer to the name Josh now. He says Josh is dead. There was even some type of symbolic burial ceremony to say goodbye to Josh, once and for all. You've been listening to an excerpt from a six-part series telling the true account of a family impacted by the transgender movement. To read this important blog series, visit frc.org/cult.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website is TonyPerkins.com. I, 20 years ago, when I was in the legislature in Louisiana serving on the Health and Welfare Committee, if you would have put a piece of legislation in front of me dealing with underage children and transgender surgery and hormones, I would have fallen out of the chair. But it's become an issue. In fact, about a dozen states are advancing legislation to protect underage children from life-altering surgeries and hormones, causing effects that in some cases cannot be reversed. In fact, Alabama being one of those states that's taken it. We talked about South Dakota. I'm sorry, Georgia being another one of those states. We've talked about South Dakota. Well, Dr. Quentin Van Meter, a board-certified pediatric endocrinologist in private practice in Atlanta, Georgia, is on the pediatric clinic facility at both Emory University and Morehouse College Medical Schools. He has 40 years of experience in dealing with transgender issues, and he recently testified before the Alabama legislature on one of these measures. Dr. Van Meter, welcome to Washington Watch.
Glad to be with you. Thanks, Tony.
Let me ask you this. Why is this an issue of importance, that we protect minors that are being subjected to these life-altering surgeries?
Well, we do know that they're a very important part of a child's life is to progress through puberty. Puberty is not a disease state. It is a physiologic change of the human body from a non-reproductive, immature child to a reproductive adult. And so just in the basic sciences, keeping sort of moral and religious issues aside, there is a necessity for the human body to go through this process. And in the process, the infertile male child becomes a fertile man, and the same happens for women on their side. These drugs, the treatments are essentially to block that pubertal process from happening. What we do know in these children who are confused about their gender in young childhood and who get into puberty is that if you let them proceed through puberty and you counsel them through this, and it, counseling is key and essential. It's not a passive thing at all. It's a very deep concept of looking into all of the psychological background and the reasons for which this child chose a gender dysphoria issue to help them escape from pain and agony caused by things that have happened in their lives. These children then are blocked in puberty and allowed to wait until they take cross-sex hormones and proceed then to try to appear like the opposite sex. Sex is binary. It is biologic. There are no in-betweens. They're males or males and females are females, and they cannot be changed. You can change appearance. This is harmful. We do know that puberty is necessary. It has a purpose. We do know that absence of puberty causes some problems with bone building in both males and females. We do know that high levels of wrong sex hormones that don't belong to the biologic body of the patient create disease states that are very well known throughout childhood and adulthood, and they're aggressively treated so that those side effects will not happen. And yet these treatment protocols that are recommended actually jack up hormone levels to incredibly high levels, far past the disease states I'm talking about. So we don't want children to undergo anything that's harmful. We don't want medicine or surgery, because there are no studies to show that it is safe in the long run, and there are studies that suggest that it actually has adverse outcomes.
Now, Dr. Van Meter, you said put morality and politics aside. I think if we did that, we actually wouldn't be talking about this, because it no one would be doing it. I mean,
right.
If you can't buy cigarettes or alcohol until you're 21 years old, I mean, that's just – I remember when I was in the legislature, you had to be 18 to – there were laws being passed. You had to be 18 to get a tattoo or parental permission to get your ears pierced. Why – should you be able to change your body chemistry, radical surgeries, oftentimes in some places without parental authorization or even notification?
There is no reason behind that, other than it is a sort of a train rolling on a track very fast at warp speed. The incidence of this condition of gender incongruence or confusion used to be about 6 out of 100,000 adult males and 3 out of 100,000 adult females. It is now estimated to be in 1.5% of the population of kids across the country today. It is a sort of a cult phenomenon. It's been fans have been flamed by internet access, hysteria, many things that is basically use this as an excuse to take a child who is miserable in their middle school and adolescent years for any number of reasons that we all were miserable when we grew up through those times, and to give them a bright, shiny object that promises them extensive amounts of happiness and success, when in truth that's not what it really is. So it's a shiny object that draws attention and draws these kids into a state of making decisions that they should not be able to make.
Dr. Van Meter, we're up against a break. Could you possibly hold on for 2 minutes so I can ask you a couple more questions, or you got to go?
I'd be happy to.
Okay, because you testified before the Alabama legislature, and I want to ask you about that experience. But what you've described here to me, what's happening to these kids with being fueled by the internet, being fueled by messages they're getting from Hollywood, affirmed by their peers, and then with policymakers, in some cases, encouraging them by not allowing parents to be a part of this. This, to me, sounds like child abuse. I want to talk about that on the other side of the break. Folks, Dr. Van Meter is going to stick with us. I hope you will as well. And then Travis Weber is going to be joining us with an update on what's happening on all the states as we are at the height of the state legislative season. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemicalabortion.
China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. the Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, President of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever heard the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Some progressive universities are offering courses to help men unlearn rigid definitions of masculinity, treating it as if it were a mental health condition. Thankfully, the culture doesn't have the last word on manhood. God does. Check out our StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. All right, I'm going to give you the poll results here in just a moment from our question that we've carried over from yesterday regarding Nike and other U.S. companies that preach social justice here at home but are either aiding in or benefiting from the repression of religious minorities in China. If you want to participate in that, I'm going to give you a few more minutes. Text radio to 53445. If you get your phone, text radio, the word radio, to the number 53445. I'll send it to you. I'm going to give you the results in just a moment. All right, as I mentioned, about a dozen states pursuing legislation that would protect minor children from these transgender surgeries and hormones. South Carolina, Florida, Missouri, Ohio, Illinois, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Kentucky, Alabama, and Georgia, which just introduced it. South Dakota, we talked about earlier, passed the House. They killed it. The weak-kneed governor there was not helpful. It died in the Senate, or at least it's just about dead. Joining me to talk about this, Dr. Quentin Van Meter, board-certified pediatric endocrinologist in private practice in Atlanta, Georgia. He is on the pediatric clinic faculty of both Emory University and Morehouse College Medical Schools, has 40 years of experience in dealing with transgender issues, and he testified before the Alabama hearing on this bill. Dr. Van Meter, what was the experience like testifying before the legislature there in Alabama?
Well, I was humbled because I'm not a lawmaker and have no legal training, but I was very encouraged to listen to the way the bill was constructed, to listen to the discussion of the committee hearing members, both pro and con. I was one of five people that was allowed to testify as a proponent for the legislation in both the House hearing and the Senate hearing. I was treated with respect by the legislative members there. We listened to the other side, sort of who were opposed to the bill. And it was an interesting thing to watch the kinds of individuals and their stories that were against it and the reasons why they were against it. It was very heartening that both the House Committee and the Senate Committee, by a large majority, passed those bills on to their major chambers to be voted on later in the session. It was interesting at the end of the Senate hearing because there was a sort of a lot of brouhaha developed by the opponents to the bill, with finger pointing, shaking fists, and shouting at all of us, and trying to corner us into places to scold us roundly for what we stood for, calling us names and whatnot. But that's a small little tiny infraction for just it was just an explanation of their passion against what we believed in was based on science. Well, our side really presented beautiful science. Their side presented anecdotes, and it was just the legislators could see that clearly.
Well, that's not unusual. I mean, it's interesting. Those on the left who often talked about conservatives not embracing science, the science is on the side of this issue. But I want to go back. You said that there were those that were shouting, and there was a fraction of the people there. But have you experienced any pushback from as a professional who's dealt with this, speaking out on legislation? Have you received any pushback from peers or colleagues in the medical field?
I have had a little bit of negative pushback. Some of the folks that refer to my pediatric practice in Atlanta, it was done very respectfully, and that I really appreciate, because we have a lot of collegiality and amongst our physician group here in the Atlanta metro area. I have had a lot of positive feedback from patients who indicate they've heard me. I've spoken in Australia and the UK and in Budapest on this subject, and have received very good feedback and encouragement to continue doing this. And I get discouraged sometimes about the fact that we're not gaining traction. I hope and pray that what we do is gain traction through positive feedback and spreading the word amongst rational people on the planet here.
Dr. Van Meter, one final question for you. As a professional, as a doctor, medical doctor, is it not dangerous if we start making policies based upon anecdotes as opposed to science and fact?
It is very dangerous, and I will just tell you, for instance, there is a legislation in Tennessee that's pending, and there is a list of people who wrote a letter against that legislation to halt treatment of minors. And it was signed by a number of physicians and healthcare specialists in the state of Tennessee, but also by some of the major players in the transgender centers around the country. And they quoted literature that basically said everything that is in the bill is a misstatement and is scientifically not accurate. I had a chance. I'm familiar with many of the articles that they quoted, and then some that I was not familiar with, I looked up just to review. And it's a process of making an anecdotal statement of an opinion and putting it in an article, then quoting that article in another article saying that it's proof. And it just compounds itself. There is no science at all that says this is safe or effective over the long run, because we haven't been doing it long enough. And there are no control groups. This is an experiment on children without any ethical framework in which to do it, something that's an anathema to those of us that do clinical research and are very careful about clinical practices that protect our patients from experimentation. So it's a dichotomy that is hard to swallow.
Can you point to any other issue in which we would pursue it in the same way, without the control groups, without the science, without the research, that we would move forward with? Any other area that you've seen?
I'm not aware of that, and I've practiced pediatrics for 46 years, and this is just something that is so foreign to ethical science. This has a huge amount of financial support behind it that is quite concern. The LGB community has embraced this, even when it essentially is harmful to those who might end up being same-sex attracted instead of transgender. It's almost as if this is an alternate track that has medical and surgical harms attached to it that are just unfathomable in terms of the outcomes. And so we're compounding injury here, and it's just it's the strangest coalition, but it is very powerful.
All right, Dr. Quentin Van Meter, thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for being willing to speak truth into this issue across the country.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right, Dr. Quentin Van Meter, fascinating. No other place, no other issue would we pursue it in the same manner, recklessly, which endangers the lives of children and puts them on a track that is going to create confusion. And as we've talked about on the program, Peter Sprigg talks about this, you know, when you come to the issue of suicide, this only intensifies the internal conflict that many of these young children have. All right. This is the height of the legislative season, and so a lot of measures moving through. And Travis Weber joins me, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council. I want to stick with Alabama for just a moment because they passed another piece of legislation. Well, actually, it wasn't legislation. It was resolution. But they became the 16th state to recognize pornography as a public health crisis. That passed both the Senate and the House in Alabama. Growing recognition that pornography is a major problem.
Tony, indeed, that's correct. And it's really good to see Alabama pass this resolution. The vote in the House on Thursday was 67-19. You know, this is the 16th state now to recognize the harmful effects of pornography in this manner. I think this shows the growing understanding and support of the deep and long-term dangers of pornography to our society at large. We've been aware of this for some time. You've talked about it. But this is good because it's recognition from government that this is something that affects everyone in society. And we have been tracking this issue. My colleague Petrina Mosley writes about this. We have other resources on the dangers of this. But it's a very deep and problematic issue, and I'm glad that they recognized it by approving this resolution.
See, the resolution in part reads this, that we recognize that pornography is a public health hazard that leads to a broad spectrum of individual and public health impacts and societal harms. Furthermore, we recognize the need for education, prevention, research, and policy change at the local, state, and national level in order to address the pornography epidemic that is harming the people of our state and nation, end quote. I think it is a part, Travis, and there'll be those, you know, on the left that'll go, you know, start foaming at the mouth, their eyes will roll back in their head at the statement, but it's a part of the sexual confusion that is taking place in our society, because what we've done is we've taken human sexuality, which is a gift from God within the context of marriage between a man and a woman, and we've so perverted it. And pornography was really one of the vanguards in the perversion of human sexuality.
It is. And, you know, we could look at all these issues as Christians under the rubric of, as you mentioned, departure from God's design for sexuality. We take what God has given us and we twist it and contort it. It goes haywire. But most of all, it goes haywire for our own harm, for our own destruction. And this is what people need to see. You know, and the interesting thing about this is increasingly you have people who recognize the problem that pornography has caused in their life long term, and they're not even doing it from a Christian perspective. They're just recognizing what God has told us to be true, even if they're not attributing that to God. And that's good. That's a good thing.
But a lot of harm in the process that has come about because of this. And there is help. Now, it's difficult. This is a difficult, difficult issue to break. And I have no doubt that there are some listening today that have some issues. There is help, there is hope, but it is not easy. But it's like a black hole. It just sucks people into it. It's destructive for relationships, marital relationships, relationships with children, you know, with your own children because of this dark. And it's not just men anymore. Women are increasingly becoming addicted to pornography. But it's this dark cloud you operate under because, especially as a believer, as a Christian, this is used against you by Satan to build up guilt, to incapacitate you as a believer in your walk with God. You've got to be free from this.
Tony, it's important for listeners that are hearing us discuss this to understand that everything, as you know, everything we do here at FRC is from a Christian biblical worldview, derived from our Christian identity, and therefore it all flows out from what I mentioned earlier about us advocating for the common good of all people in our society, advocating for policies which promote flourishing according to God's design, and trying to stop policies which work against that. The manifestation of pornography in this resolution notes that advances in technology have accelerated the harm. It talks about the objectification of women, something that many people will agree with us on. That is furthered by pornography. The resolution notes the aberrant nature of this and the harm that comes from it. This is the same reason that we advocate, as you know, for the common good, for human flourishing in many other areas of sexuality, including what we were just talking about, distorting God's design. It's popping up all over the place.
Now, we don't have it on the website, but there are resources available on this issue of pornography, because we've done a number of those. You've mentioned them earlier. Those can be found at frc.org.
Tony, that's correct. My colleague Petrina Mosley has written some of them. We have one on women and pornography, frc.org/women and pornography, and there are others by folks that we've worked with and some of our experts who've written for us on this topic.
Yeah. And by the way, this just reminds me to mention once again, men coming this weekend to Naples, Florida. We will have our Stand Courageous conference. It's at New Hope Ministries in Naples, Florida. To find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com or go to StandCourageous.com. All right, Travis, I'm going to give you the highlights of some of the other states. But before we do that, I want to give the poll results carried over from yesterday. And this is the question that many of you answered. Knowing that Nike and other U.S. companies, which preach social justice here at home, are either aiding in or benefiting from the repression of religious minorities in China, will you stop doing business with those companies? Now, if you missed yesterday's program, you can go back and listen in the archives. We were discussing a Washington Post article about Nike and their plants in China that are using forced labor of Uyghur Muslims. Anyway, the results: 96% of you, 96% of you said you would stop doing business with those types of companies like Nike and others that are benefiting from the repression of religious minorities in China. And folks, believe me, we're going to be talking a lot more about this, because this is outrageous that U.S. businesses that preach social justice here at home are benefiting either directly or indirectly from the repression of religious minorities in China. All right, Travis, before we run out of time, highlights of some of the other states.
Tony, there's a lot going on in the states. I'm looking at a documentary in front of me here from our team. We're tracking this week alone 20 bills on our issues moving throughout the states. There's a lot on life, family, and religious freedom. The viewers need to know we are tracking for them, communicating our concerns to their elected officials. If they'll follow FRC at frc.org, they can be part of this work. Good news in the states: West Virginia, we saw the governor signed their state born alive protections just the other day. This comes on the heels of a 93-5 vote in the House, 32-0 vote in the Senate. The governor signed that bill now, which brings West Virginia up to the strong protection level on our map, frz.org/pro-life maps. They can find our Born Alive map. We're tracking this issue nationwide, so we can celebrate that positive news. In addition, we're tracking the other bills on the gender transition issue we talked about with Alabama, where they're popping up in the other states, and much, much more. A lot of good work at the state level from our folks here. We're going to continue to do that work.
All right. I shortchanged you. I'll have to invite you back again another day.
Okay.
How about tomorrow?
Okay.
All right. All right, folks, tune in tomorrow, because I will give you a report from being in the Supreme Court for the oral arguments on the Louisiana abortion case. That's tomorrow here on Washington Watch. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6. It says, when you've done everything you could do and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.